eBay has everything you need for Halloween.
Honey, just to let you know, Jacob's got Halloween coming up.
New kids' Halloween costumes.
And he's been asked to do trick-or-treating.
Halloween sweets.
With some of the older kids from year 9.
Scary makeup.
And I said they could all come to ours afterwards.
Halloween decorations.
With their mums and dads.
Booze. Discover a fantastic range of new Halloween items you can buy instantly with free delivery from eBay. The ultimate turn your little monsters into actual monsters shop.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast, talking Arizona Cardinals football. And I am your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site among the USA Today family of sites. And my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also co-host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Welcome, Seth. And it's we took a week off. I wasn't around in the country, so you know the Cardinals had a mini bye, and you know I just happened to take advantage of that as well. So we're back after a couple of weeks, and you know the sky is not falling anymore. Apparently, is it not?
No, and you know, albeit it was against really bad football teams, the Arizona Cardinals look like the team, you know, we kind of expected coming into this season. Even with Drew Stanton at quarterback, you know, we can breeze through this game, but even with Drew Stanton at quarterback, the offense started to actually look competent. And I think, and you and I, you know, talked about this before the San Francisco game, before you left on vacation, that maybe that's what Bruce Arians needed, was Drew Stanton at quarterback for a game to figure out that his team, this 2016 iteration of the Arizona Cardinals, is not the 2015 Arizona Cardinals. And so you can't expect to throw the ball down the field and be successful. You in turn have to actually utilize, perhaps, you know, maybe you and I are biased, but in our opinion, the best running back in the NFL, and make him the focal point of your offense, and then build your passing game off of what he is forcing the defense to do. And you know, it took one whole half in the San Francisco game before Bruce Arians kind of went to that. And since that time, it's basically become the David Johnson-run Arizona Cardinals, with a little mix in of Carson Palmer and that dynamic passing game. But it's just not the same one. It's a much more short field, intermediate field throws, and a group of receivers that are making catches that aren't getting a ton of run after the catch and are just moving the chains and really, you know, playing a grinded out, maybe a not so fun type of game. But man, I will take the last 2 weeks over, you know, a shootout or a blowout or anything like that, because it has just been beautiful, poetic, smash mouth football. And as a football fan, not even as a Cardinal fan, as a football fan, that's why I enjoy watching teams like Alabama in college. And, you know, I actually did, you know, secretly enjoy watching the Jim Harbaugh version of the San Francisco 49ers, because I just love teams that line up and say, I dare you to stop us. And then nobody can. So it just makes it fun.
Yes, so we are looking at a different Arizona Cardinals now. Since we were last on the air, since you last listened to this lovely podcast, Rise Up, See Red, the Cardinals, last time we were on the air, it seemed like everything was wrong. Cardinals 1-3, they just lost to the Rams. But since that time, the Cardinals defeated the San Francisco 49ers 33-21 on Thursday Night Football. Carson Palmer did not play. He couldn't come out of the concussion protocol in time. However, the Cardinals did lose a couple players in that game against San Francisco. Evan Mathis injured his ankle. He's on injured reserve. Is likely to miss the rest of the season. It's unlikely that he'll be back in time to be the guy that they can bring back. Mike Iupati also injured his left ankle in that game. He ultimately would miss the game on Monday night against the New York Jets. But the Cardinals behind Drew Stanton, who statistically was really pretty bad, 11 of 28 for 100 and some odd yards, did have a couple of touchdowns, didn't.
Hey, he threw more touchdowns than old Carson Palmer did yesterday.
It's true. And the Cardinals get away with, after a very, very, boring start to that Thursday night game, they get a 33-21 victory. The defense really picks things up in the second half, and it seemed like a couple of big plays happened just what they've been waiting for all year, and then things started rolling. They follow that up after a mini bye. They get Carson Palmer back. And on Monday night, so we're recording on Tuesday night, so last night, Monday night, the Cardinals completely dismantled the New York Jets 28-3 behind. And both games kind of were the David Johnson story. He rushed for 157 yards and two touchdowns against San Francisco, then rushed for 111 yards and three touchdowns against the Jets. And it's really been the David Johnson with some Larry Fitzgerald in there, and that's really been kind of it. So now the Cardinals sit at 3-3. They now face the Seattle Seahawks this weekend, then the Carolina Panthers before the bye. And, as much as we talked about at the start of the season, the potential of being 7-0 or at this point, or 6-0 going into the Seattle game, despite the bad start, the Cardinals are back on track and in position to really start, setting themselves up for what it should be. So that's what we're going to talk about. So basically the crux of this show is, are the Cardinals fixed? Did they get things right? Did they get them right in time and early enough? So we're going to talk about that show. We're going to talk about our takeaways for the last two couple of games. What impressions moving forward? David Johnson, of course, Carson Palmer, the defense. And then look ahead to the Seattle Seahawks as well as the games that follow, because they do have, after Seattle and the bye and Carolina, that's really when things start to get a little bit rough. But before we go ahead and get started, just tell you a little about a boatload of money you can make this week betting at mybookie.ag. Now, you guys, football fans, you guys know who's going to win the game, right? So it's time to put your money where your mouth is. So get some money on the game and score a big win today. Join thousands of online players and start betting at MyBookie. I urge them. One of the biggest things about MyBookie is that you win and they pay. So you're wasting your time if you bet anywhere else. They have in-game live betting, so even after kickoff, you can get some bets in. And unlike some other websites you might find, MyBookie offers fast, no-hassle payouts when you win. So join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with 100% bonus if it's your first time. So head on over, mybookie.ag. Use the promo code Cardinals for our show, Cardinals, to activate the offer, and do that. You play, you win, you get paid. Again, visit mybookie.ag today or call 800-900-BETS, B-E-T-S. Expert or rookie, you got to check out MyBookie. Sign up today. And so let's go ahead and get started, as the show is brought to you by mybookie.ag. Let's talk about the kind of the takeaways. So first of all, here's the big question. Are the Cardinals fixed? Because it kind of looks like it until you go a little bit deep. So on the surface, it looks like the Cardinals are fixed. They're scoring points. They are stopping teams. They're getting turnovers, and they're taking care of the football again. And Swagger's back. So are the Cardinals fixed? Is that what you think?
Fixed might be like a strong word, but they're definitely at least a more competitive and a team that looks like they belong in the conversation for at least a playoff berth. And I think this week, this game against the Seattle Seahawks is really going to define who they are, if they are fixed, yada, yada, yada. But after, we didn't get to talk after the the great game in San Francisco. We didn't get to talk, but this is a team that when we last spoke, there were legitimate questions, concerns. You know, was this team even playoff worthy? And now sitting at 3-3, you know, that's not where you and I expected them to be. We were thinking more along the lines of, you know, 6-0, 5-1, maybe 4-2 if something went really off the rails. But here they are, 3-3, and you think they have found their identity, that they're a running smash-mouth football team that wins games by controlling the clock, running the football, and playing phenomenal defense. And, you know, that's not a bad way to win football games. We saw it work a little bit last year with the Denver Broncos. We saw it work in Seattle with their first run to a title. And then, you know, I wrote about it right after their loss to Carolina that I thought this was the way that they would have to go to win football games moving forward. And yeah, I mean, it looks like that is the team they're going to be. Now, it is only, you know, one game with Carson Palmer and a half a game with Drew Stanton in that kind of role and situation. So maybe he's just, you know, waiting to unleash the downfield passing attack again for Seattle. But I don't think that this construction of a team, that it would necessarily be bad for them to be a ball control offense that runs the ball and, you know, plays great defense.
And the biggest takeaway obviously has to be this. David Johnson. Did we, in the last 2 weeks, have we suddenly seen David Johnson become the best running back in the NFL? I mean, obviously it's fresh in our eyes. He's coming off 157 yards. He's coming off the 111. I mean, the 157, fantastic. It was the best rushing performance of the season by running back until it happened against the Steelers on Sunday. But 157 yards against the worst rush defense in the NFL. Okay, that looks good. But then against the Jets, number two rushing defense, 111 yards, three touchdowns. I mean, you could say it's a coming out party, but he came out last year. But did he just take the title away from other running backs? Le'Veon Bell, you know, Ezekiel Elliott's not quite there yet, performing at a fantastic, LeSean McCoy. Is David Johnson the best running back in the NFL? I feel weird saying that because, you know, it is just six games into the season and you still got, you know, some established backs out there, but it sure looks like it, doesn't it?
You know, I think it's a 3 or 4 way question. And I think you mentioned them all. I think, you know, people are going to take a lot away from Ezekiel Elliott because of the offensive line he plays behind. But, you know, if you watch what he's doing and if you look at through history what he's doing, he's on a historic run right now. Then, you know, I think LeSean McCoy has kind of put himself back in the discussion. And then I think Le'Veon Bell is still absolutely, you know, a force to be reckoned with. So I don't think you can go wrong in which one you decide is the best. I just think that for what the Cardinals need, I don't know if there's a better running back in the NFL than David Johnson. Because he kind of is a combination of, you know, a lot of those guys. He's a combination of Le'Veon Bell. He's a combination, you know, he's shifty like LeSean McCoy. He has the same type of power as Ezekiel Elliott. You know, and we've seen him do special things and unique things that nobody in the NFL else can do. So maybe, you know, maybe he is. I'm not going to be objected to if somebody wants to put one of those other three in the conversation. But I think it's a lock that he's, you know, a top five back in the NFL. And, you know, I think when you look at it from that direction, you're really just kind of picking what you want in a running back as opposed to, you know, who's the quote unquote best. But, you know, I think as homers, you and I are going to say David Johnson are, and I don't think it's just because we're homers. I think, you know, there's a lot behind that to back that up.
And the thing is he has no weaknesses. If you look at the type of back he is, there's nothing he doesn't do well. He runs through guys, so he's great after contact. I mean, Pro Football Focus has kept, you know, those stats, but it seems roughly two-thirds of his yards this season are coming after contact. So he's patient. He has an incredible cut move. He's got breakaway speed. He's got size to run you over. He can elude you. He's shifty. Then he can stiff arm you. There is nothing in his game that he can't do that. And add the fact that he's really a wide receiver in a running back when it comes to his receiving skills and his route running. You know, he still looks at the pass, the blitz pickup, and yeah, there's something to that. There's something to that. He did miss one. But if you look at running back skills, he really is the entire package. And finally, a running back who had a good rookie season is living up to the hype. Because we've heard hype year after year after year after, you know, whether it was Andre Ellington for the break, he was going to have a breakout year in year two, whether it was Beanie Wells. They've had flash of the pan running backs, especially in the mid to late rounds. They've had them all over the place in the last 30 years. They draft a guy, their top draft picks never work out running back, but their late ones do, but they only last for years. So they'll flash for the first year and a half and then disappear. For the first time, we're having a kid who they just fell in love with once they drafted him and he get in the camp. And he's living up every single bit to the hype. And the best part is, they're being so careful not to let it get to his head. I mean, after his performance on Monday, and Bruce Arians is still, he might get a game ball. And it's kind of crazy that he points out the errors that he missed, mistakes, you know, in the other games. Like, yeah, he did well, but he left another 100 yards on the field with mistakes that he made. And so he's performing as well or better than anyone else in the league. And the Cardinals are still giving him they're giving him the Calais Campbell treatment of a year ago.
Yeah. And, you know, I think he's just a unique talent, and it's, you don't want to say lucky because it was a good drafting, but, you know, we all know the story. It was luck that he ended up on the Arizona Cardinals as opposed to Amir Abdullah. So
think about this. Just look at that. They wanted Amir Abdullah. They drafted Amir Abdullah. Neither do they get David Johnson, but they don't have Marcus Golden, and who have been the two bright stars of this season so far.
Yeah.
Johnson and Golden. Wow. Yeah, and they fell into those two selections.
Right. So it's unique how that benefits you sometimes as opposed to getting the guys you have higher on your draft board. You know, sometimes your draft board's not as good as you think it is. So that, you know, it's good to see how well he is playing and what he is doing. And I think overall, you know, Arians isn't going to admit it, and maybe he's not going to change it, but I really think we're going to start to see a philosophical change in the way the offense works, because, I mean, what he is doing is just so dominant, and it makes the game so much easier for everybody else involved. And I think that's, you know, an extremely important dynamic that we haven't really ever seen before, especially in a running back.
So is that the case? That's the big question now. So you've had fantastic rushing performances. Cardinals are running the ball really well at this point. And you know, the passing game it wasn't in sync before Carson Palmer went down. Drew Stanton certainly wasn't in sync. I mean, he was 8 of 20 or 7 of 20 in the first half against San Francisco. Then only 4 of 8 at the rest of the way, and you know, 4 of 8, and 2 of those completions were touchdowns. And then you look at the game against the Jets. Carson Palmer had 34 pass attempts, but it didn't feel like it. It was because they had, you know, almost 80 plays that they ran. But is it really a philosophical shift, or is it just what's working right now? I still find it hard to believe that Bruce Arians is changing what he is. I think all it is that it's what's working right now. And they knew that they had to attack the Jets differently because and I think they almost out, it's almost like their game plan was they outsmarted themselves into a good, they overthought a little bit into a great game plan. You looked at the numbers, Jets have an atrocious pass defense. They've been given a big play after big play after big play. Logic says, you go after them deep. Arians knows Horton, and he says, no, they're going to have that fixed because Bowles. They know Bowles, and Bowles will get it fixed. So they say, no, we're not going to attack that. We're going to go a different way. So we're going to go against the run because they, you know, we're going to go with the short game, the intermediate game. We're not going to force the ball down the field. It's almost like had it not worked out, guess what? We would be second guessing that game plan, saying they overthought things. They were overthinking with the approach. If you've got a terrible team throwing down a defending pass down the field, and what you've got your offense, an offense that's built to throw that, you throw the ball down the field, right? No, they overthought themselves into a perfect game plan, and they scored points in the first quarter. They scored points throughout the game, so they scored a touchdown every quarter, and then they looked great, aside from a little bit of sloppiness with the penalties. But wow, but I'm not convinced that Arians has really changed his stripes. I think it's just, as long as David Johnson is hot, they're going to ride him. Because that's what Bruce Arians does. You ride what's hot. But I think as the second that there's a little bit of adversity, I think it'll go back to that passing game.
Well, and I don't think he's going to stop passing the ball as much as he only threw the ball down the field one time yesterday. He had one.
And it was on a free play.
Yeah, he had one, you know, quote-unquote home run ball. Before that game, you know, Carson Palmer was averaging the 6 home run balls a game. And that was even in a slightly abbreviated, you know, St. Louis Rams game. So I think the philosophical change is not necessarily that he's going to run the ball more, but more how he's going to pass the ball. And it's going to be the fact that he's willing and he understands that he's going to have to take what the defense gives him, as opposed to trying to force the issue and force the ball down the field, you know, trying to make plays deep. I think that's the biggest difference / change, whatever you want to call it. Because, you know, we've seen for, what, now 3 years and 4.5 games that, I mean, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. It doesn't matter who the personnel is. Bruce Arians wants to throw the ball down the field. And it literally wasn't until the second half of San Francisco that he's like, maybe this isn't the way I'm going to win this year. Doesn't mean going forward, or maybe it was just, like you said, these couple of games. But I think the fact that he acknowledged it and changed it means that he understands that maybe something has to change. Maybe something has to be slightly different for this team to be successful. And it means less of the deep ball and more of, you know, the David Johnson show with you know, working the ball down the field methodically as opposed to those, you know, quote unquote home run throws. So, but again, I don't think it changes as much as it is a, or I don't think the run pass changes as much as it's, we're going to still throw the football a ton. We just want to do it, intelligently and taking what the defense gives us instead of trying to force those deep throws.
And let's talk a little bit more about the offense and Carson Palmer moving forward. So next up on Rise Up C-Red, let's talk about Carson Palmer's role in how he's playing. And I have some thoughts about that. So coming up right after, coming up next on Rise Up, we're going to talk a little bit more about the offense and more about Carson Palmer. We're back on Rise Up C-Red. We've been talking about the Arizona Cardinals, whether or not they are fixed after their two straight victories, bringing the record to 3-3. And we're talking about the offense, David Johnson and his incredible run right now. Bruce Arians, have things changed? Seth was just talking about just before the break a little bit about, you know, what the offense has become. Now, I kind of have a theory on what's happening, and it leans on this. The Carson Palmer we're seeing this year is not the 2015 Carson Palmer for whatever reason. This is a 2013 Carson Palmer. Remember how that offense was? They did not attack the downfield. They didn't attack down the field nearly as well. And it's not necessarily because of Carson Palmer's arm strength, although I have a theory on that. This is pure speculation, especially after Bruce Arians said on Monday, or on Tuesday, how he really benefited from that rest, kind of for his arm strength, is that shoulder injury that creeped up at the beginning of 2014. He was a rehab machine and a workout machine after the 2014 season because of the shoulder and because of the ACL. So he was all work. He rehabbed that shoulder in that off season, like he had shoulder surgery. So he came back really sharp. The last off season was different because he was healthy, aside from whatever was up with the finger. So he was healthy. I think that going into last season, the work that he did on his shoulder, which helped with his arm strength and his mechanics, I think really set him up for the success he had last season. And perhaps whether it's the shoulder or just age, we're seeing a 2013 Palmer, and it's combined with how he looks behind center in the pocket. Last year, he looked elite. He looked comfortable. He was moving around. His movement, his feet were great. But the offensive line also kept him really clean. And we'd seen since Arians took over, since 2013, the sacks were going down every single year. But this year it went up. And remember the line play, the offensive line play of 2013, the Bradley Sowell days, and you know, you had Paul Fanica and Ted Larson. Well, I guess Paul Fanica, whatever. Those offensive lines weren't all that good. Yet Eric Winston, he did well. Because of the changes on the offensive line this year, this first part of the season, the offensive line has had some struggles in the passing attack, and he hasn't been comfortable back there. So he's not taking the shots down the field, or when he is, he got comfortable in the offense, and that's when he became the pumpkin chucker. He was super comfortable throwing the ball down the field. He's throwing the ball down the field. He's connecting receivers. His accuracy is fantastic. This year, he's a little bit erratic. He's just a little bit off. I think the pressure that he's had this season has affected him, and he's looking more like a 2013 Palmer, which has forced him to take less shots. I don't think it's a little less. I think it's a little bit less on Bruce Arians as it is Carson Palmer changing his attack, because as we've learned, Arians has given Palmer perhaps more freedom at the line of scrimmage than really any quarterback that he's given. He'll send in a run play, and Palmer has the freedom to, with the run pass option, to take a pass play. And even at the beginning of the game, there was, you know, it was 3rd-and-1 or 3rd-and-2, and that was an obvious, hey, run the ball up to David Johnson. All of a sudden, David Johnson motions out wide, and there was an incomplete pass. You know, there was a deflection, some pressure on Palmer. I don't think that was an Arians thing. I think Palmer did that at the line of scrimmage. So I think we're seeing, it's not necessarily Bruce Arians changing. I think we're seeing Carson Palmer change right now because I don't think he's 100%. For whether it's arm strength, it's the shoulder, or simply age, or the fact that the offensive line hasn't been as good as it's been in the past couple of years yet, that's the change. And I think we're seeing a change in Palmer's approach. And it's not so much the other teams. And I'm going to hold to this. There's this local story of the deep ball has been taken away by other teams. I don't agree with it. Bruce Arians has kind of said, it's just they're not executing. The plays are there. They're getting plays down the field. Palmer's overthrown, or they're dropping passes. Everything's there except the execution. So I don't think other teams have taken the deep ball away because everyone knows Bruce Arians' offense. They know what he's going to try to do. It's just they haven't been as good at it.
Right, and I think the reason they haven't been as good is, like you said, is it hangs on the quarterback. This offense is quarterback centric, and you've seen him miss throws. You've seen wide receivers, you know, not come back and get throws. But there was a play sent out by the NFL the other day where they ran almost the identical play that they ran against the LA Rams this year, against the St. Louis Rams last year, on a touchdown pass to J.J. Nelson. And it was this same type of play, and Palmer threw the ball into the back of the end zone, and it would have gone out of the end zone, except, you know, Nelson got up and made the play. You go back to that game against LA, and in that play, he throws the ball, but it is almost like he was throwing a jump ball for Larry Fitzgerald or Michael Floyd, not a ball out that will allow John Brown or J.J. Nelson to run underneath of it. And so I think that's kind of where, like you said, it's not necessarily that they're changing their philosophy, maybe. It's that they're understanding what's not working right now. And what's not working right now especially is the deep ball. The timing is off, which is, you know, let's be honest, is unacceptable in year four of this offense with
everyone coming back.
Yeah, basically every. You know, yeah,
this was supposed to be a 500 point team this year. There was no question going into the season about the offense.
We were having conversations, not just you and I, just in general. I mean, Dan Bickley wrote about it. Kyle Odegaard wrote about it. You know, is this going to be a historic team? No, it's not. I mean, they would have to go on such an incredible run from here on out, averaging over 40 points a game to, you know, even be close to what we expected them to be. And that's just not, you know, that's not realistic or fair. So, you know, we'll just take it for what it is right now. It is a, you know, a team that is successful based on ball control, running the ball, and Palmer making the right reads and right throws at the right time, and understanding when to throw the ball, as opposed to a big play offense that can, you know, quote unquote score from anywhere on the field.
And then we're going to go to that and talk about that passing offense. And late in the game, suddenly, Carson Palmer and the passing attack looked good again. His throws looked crisp. They were on target. Those deep outs. The throws were looking good. That touchdown pass to Michael Floyd, a perfectly placed ball. After the running game got started, it looked like in that final couple of series before they lifted Palmer, it looked like the passing game got in sync. So, you know, did the Cardinals get fixed? You know, if we look at how they played, it might be. It might have been they needed those two games. And I thought something, because they were just a little bit off. They were just a little bit off leading up, you know, that 1-3 start. There were just a few plays here and there. It just didn't look quite in sorts. Like, there was just a couple things they needed a little bit of focus. Bruce Stanton comes to the game, and I thought, you know, maybe this is exactly what they need. Not necessarily they need a break from Carson Palmer, but they needed the focus, knowing that they don't have Carson Palmer to bail them out, and he hasn't been able to bail people out this year, just hasn't done it. But just the knowledge of his teammates knowing, okay, we all need to focus a little bit more because we've got Drew in there. Now, we trust Drew, but we have to execute a little bit better. With that happening, suddenly their focus, Carson Palmer comes back and they ride the running game. And then in the second half, Palmer's back in sync and in rhythm. So maybe they're back to normal.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, like, to think that they could be, because they've looked, you know, at least competence, like, to not strong enough of a word. Like, they've looked at least like they were going to be a dynamic team as opposed to, you know, kind of a smash mouth boring team. They still had, like you said, they were still making plays in the passing game. They were still able to do some things, and that is, you know, that's going to be the key. Like, you look at Denver last year, and that's who I've talked about, you know, all along, that this is who they need to build their team like. And I think, you know, you look at it and it is all about finding a way to get Carson Palmer in a rhythm so he can be successful, because he hasn't looked the same, or, you know, dominant or dynamic since, I mean, what, week 15 last year, 14 last year? And so...
Yeah, although the Tampa game, he looked good. He was really on target in against Tampa.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, I think you, like you said earlier, there are games where he can be the focal point. I just think they needed to find a way to make sure that if he wasn't the focal point, they were in a lot of trouble. Right.
Right. Exactly. And it was as if everyone was waiting for Carson Palmer to be MVP type Carson Palmer, and he hadn't been that way. So everything was just out of sync. But let's move on to the defensive side of the ball, because truth be told, I believe the success that they've started to have offensively is less about the offense and more about the defense. What do you think? Because suddenly they made a play. The defense had not, I mean, aside from the pick party, just when things fell apart against Jameis Winston, the defense just looked a little out of sync. They've been getting good play up front. They really have all season. They've been playing fantastically up front. Mm-hmm. The defensive backfield suddenly is gelling. And that tipped pass interception that Calais Campbell made suddenly was the play that they were looking for. We talked about in the first several games how, you know, they need a big play, or they needed someone to make a big play. And it was like they were waiting for a big play to happen to sort of get loose. That play loosened the defense up, and they've been flying around and look like those 2013 and 2014 defense teams that are good against everything, that are dominating against the run. I mean, they held the Jets to 33 yards rushing. They held Matt Forte to what was
19.
It? 19 rushing yards. They're getting turnovers. They're getting their hands on balls in the passing game. All of a sudden, it's the defense that is fueling things like back in 2013 and 2014.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing that gel and that payoff that we expected. I mean, even look at it yesterday. You know, they didn't get a sack from Marcus Golden or Chandler Jones for the first time all season, but I'd argue that Chandler Jones might have played his best game as an Arizona Cardinal.
He was all over the place.
And people know my feeling and opinion on pressures. But what he was doing was he was creating plays for others to make. And that's, you know, that's what you want from a star. And Jones so far this season has been a star for the Arizona Cardinals. And that's, you know, I think that's a good thing, because there were legitimate questions about whether or not, you know, this was a guy that was going to come and translate, or if this was a guy that was an issue, a guy that took too many plays off, that didn't show up enough. And that's why New England was like, well, you know, we can go on without him. Now, clearly, New England understands what they're doing, because it's not like their defense has really missed a beat without Chandler Jones. But, and let's be honest, they got a second round pick for him, because as you and I talked about right after the trade, Jonathan Cooper wasn't going to do.
He was a throw in.
He was a throw in type play. But, you know, he has really become a talented and dynamic and diverse defensive player that has made them, made them better. And you're starting to see Tyrann Mathieu get into rhythm. You're starting to see Tyrann Mathieu figure out everything. And I think that's really why this team is starting to play so much better, because they had some guys that they needed to get, you know, into a rhythm together, and they needed to understand each other. And now they're getting it. And, you know, I don't ever like to like bag on a player, but I think also that this coincides with when Tyvon Branch went out. And I just don't know that he was the guy that the Cardinals needed on the back end of that defense, because they have a lot of dynamic athletes and playmakers already. Sometimes you need a guy that's steady, a guy that you can trust to, you know, be in the right position for every single play. And Branch is not necessarily that guy. And so, you know, now you look at it and they're, you know, like you said, they're playing better, they're gelling better, guys are in positions, they're not, you know, missing assignments all of a sudden. So, you know, I'm not going to say that it has benefited them, because I think Tyvon Branch is a very talented player, but, you know, maybe it has allowed them to stop trying to force so many different bodies onto the field, and instead to play, you know, with Tony Jefferson and DJ Swearinger and Tyrann Mathieu and Patrick Peterson, and then whoever can play that other corner position based on the injury. You know, Marcus Cooper obviously left. Therald Simon looked pretty good. So, you know, sometimes there is that, you know, addition by subtraction type thing.
And, you know, you made a point, and I was going to go a completely different direction. I was going to talk about, I think you're right. Their improvement coincides with the loss of Tyvon Branch. But it doesn't have anything to do with Tyvon Branch so much as it has Tyrann Mathieu. And Mathieu was just uncomfortable playing deep, in the deep safety. He was quieter. He wasn't as dynamic. And I know he needed to be back there, because otherwise he probably wouldn't have been on the field. Because honestly, Branch had been quite effective to playing in the slot. I think it wasn't so much that Branch wasn't the right fit, is the fact that Mathieu wasn't the same player. He wasn't playing near the ball. So he lost that passion. He was uncertain because he was playing back there. While had Branch been, now DJ Swearinger had himself a ball game. And if Mathieu is healthy and playing well in the slot, having that Cam, the ability that Swearinger has to just.
Yeah. He's kill, an enforcer. Yeah.
Just kill people. You have what you essentially have. Now, Mathieu's not the same type of player, but if you want to look at the defensive backfield of Seattle, where you've got Earl Thomas, the versatile, very good cover guy, and Cam Chancellor, who will just kill you, you have that duo now with Tyrann Mathieu and DJ Swearinger, because DJ is a hitter. And we, you know, that, oh my gosh, I don't know if I've seen a harder hit. And we've seen some bone-crushing hits from Dale Buchanan. That hit that he put on that receiver just a couple plays before the interception was one of the biggest hits I've ever seen. But going back to the point that I was making, I think it ties into Tyrann Mathieu. Tyrann Mathieu's return to the slot and closer return to health has made the defense right. They know their identity. They have their swagger back. And they're playing. And interestingly enough, what did we see? The Cardinals have 9 defensive linemen on their roster.
And they play like 3.
No, they don't even play 3. They played a bunch with only 1 and 2 on the field. They were playing with 6 and 7 defensive backs on the field. They're getting really good play in the back end. And I think it kind of corresponds with that. Mathieu's return to the slot, a kind of a settling down of the new faces. DJ Swearinger playing more. Marcus Cooper settling in. Therald Simon now finding a nice role. Everything is settling in, as opposed to Brandon Williams, who is athletic but looked lost out there. And it really, it discombobulated the defense. Mathieu's return to the slot, it's not necessarily the loss of Branch, but the return of Mathieu to the slot that his injury necessitated. Is what has fixed the defense.
Yeah, and so, you know, you look at it, and now you have that dynamic player, and he's not back yet, and he's not the same player yet, but, you know, he has looked good. And so you have that, and you just continue to watch and see him kind of, you know, grow back into being the potential defensive MVP that we know and love. And so I think as he gets there, this defense will continue to build and grow and become even more dynamic, because the guy outside of, you know, Chandler Jones and obviously Tyrann Mathieu, but the guy that has really impressed me this year and a guy that maybe, you know, it just took a couple of years to take the step, is Kevin Minter, who has all of a sudden become the best inside linebacker on the team. And so he's, you know, he's making more plays. He's the guy that is all over the field, as opposed to Dayon Buchanan, who is still making plays, but isn't, you know, didn't take the next step that we all kind of expected in his maturation. And I think a lot of it does have to do with how poorly the defensive line has played without Frosty Rucker. But, you know, I think also Minter deserves to be praised for how he's played this year.
It really has. And couldn't be about Buchanan. He hasn't been as dynamic. However, it appears quietly his play and coverage has improved quite a bit. He's getting his hands on passes. I've noticed that you don't see it happen a whole bunch because they haven't been targeting him, but he's done a really good job in coverage from the linebacker position, which has really been good. And Minter has been fantastic. You know, entering that contract year, he's a leader on that defense. He's a really good guy. He's really entertaining to listen to because he lets his emotion and reactions to, like, he'll get some reactions from him when he talks to the media that you want to get, because it's not all buttoned down cliches. He says the cliches, but then he's like, man, yeah, you know, and it's been really good to see that from him. So the defense played well against two dreadful offensive teams. That now move forward. Are there any other takeaways? Oh, there's one takeaway that I have. No one's talking about the punter anymore.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ryan Quigley.
Exactly.
he's not been great. He's just been fine.
Yeah.
And no one's talking about him.
Aaron Brewer's been really good too. So, I mean, that's important to get away from having to talk about guys that you don't ever want to talk about.
Right. And you know, and we didn't get to talk about this. Blessing in disguise. Chris Johnson's injury making Andre Ellington the backup.
Yeah, and off kickoffs.
Not on kickoff returns. Oh, my heavens. And, you know, what was it? First kickoff return against the 49ers. What happens? J.J. Nelson, was it 39 yards?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. This is wonderful. Britton Golden and J.J. Nelson, thank you. Because yeah. I don't ever want to see Andre back there again. I'm sorry. And Andre, great guy, great player. I don't want him on kickoff returns ever again. That was a terrible experiment.
It was, and it was unfortunate. You know, and you know, and not to be a buzzkill, but you look back and you really hope that their poor decisions coming out of training camp with their long snapper and you know, kick return guys do not cost them a potential playoff berth down the line, because, you know, I'm not going to say that it was only those players' fault, but, you know, good snap in game one, maybe they win that game. And you know, as we saw in 2013, 10-6 is, you know, can make you not get into the playoffs in the NFC.
Going to your point is actually a couple. There's three parts. So you got the long snapper, you've got kick return, you've got Brandon Williams at cornerback, although that was necessitated out of injury. But, I mean, they traded for a throwaway guy, and, I mean, did anyone really think Marcus Cooper was going to be a starter here, honestly, when they made that trade? And he's really, really been a real big help. So, you know, the decision to move Brandon Williams out of the lineup to replace – Cameron Kennedy, to move, and a couple of them just happened because of injury, to move Andre Ellington out of kickoff returns has really settled in special teams and defense. It's been eye-opening. But let's take a moment and let's kind of shift gears as we look forward to the Seattle Seahawks game. We can still talk about the defense. So next up on Rise of the Air, we're going to look ahead to the Seahawks game. What chance do they have? Are they going? Can they win? Do they need to win? How crucial is that game? And we're going to look at the schedule moving forward. As now, at 3-3, we can officially start thinking about more than just getting right. So that's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on Rise Up C-Red, and we're going to talk about the schedule moving forward and how these games, you know, carry over. They have the Seattle Seahawks this weekend at home on Sunday Night Football. Everything lines up really well for the Cardinals in this sense. The offense is clicking. David Johnson is killing it. The passing game started clicking late. The defense is flying all over the field. And now they get the division leaders and the Seahawks come into town, who are 4-1. But definitely are not the same dominant team that they've been. They've got some flaws. Obviously, they lost to the Rams. They came very close to losing to the Falcons after having a 17-3 lead. They looked, you know, they looked bad against Miami. It is a team that wins, but isn't as dominant as they've been. And this should be. And like last season, the game on the road on Sunday Night Football against Seattle was the turning point of the season. Is this game the turning point for the Cardinals season this year?
Yeah, I think it is. And you know, we kind of opened with that. And I think, you know, all of the goodness, all of the goodwill that has come from the last 2 weeks ends with a blowout, right? Like if God forbid they get blown out by Seattle, we're not going to be talking about a team that is a Super Bowl contender. We're going to be talking about a team like, is this a fringe playoff team? Are they, you know, are they even a playoff team? Like, is this how disappointing is this season, blah, blah, blah. You know, if they are able to blow out Seattle, I think it, you know, probably inspires more confidence, and we'll start to talk about, okay, this team, you know, just needed 3 weeks, 4 weeks to get right before, you know, it found its rhythm and now is, you know, is making plays again. Anything close, I think, is kind of what we're all expecting. And I think it really goes to show that they're not as far off as their record indicates, win or lose, but that they still need, you know, some work to do to get to where they want to be. Now, all of that being said, and, you know, I wrote about this.
So by the time you guys hear this show, that it will already be up on revengeofthebirds.com, and this is the money number that Seth's going to give us.
So if the Cardinals win this game, they move to 4-3. NFL teams since 1993 from 538 Sports, I believe it was 93, but that are 4-3. Have made the NFL playoffs at a 47% clip, so nearly 50%. Teams that are 3-4 make the NFL playoffs at a 19% clip. So we're talking about going from a coin flip chance at making the playoffs, which, you know, you and I, after a 1-3 start, 4-3, I think everybody would be very happy about that. You know, 3-4 and a 19% chance at making the playoffs. My goodness. I mean, I still have faith. You know, there's still some winnable games on the back half of that schedule, especially with, like, how bad Carolina has been. And, you know, New Orleans hasn't been exactly what we expected offensively. But I just don't think you want to put yourself in a position where you're at 3-4 and all of a sudden you're looking at 19% since, 1995. So the last 20 years, only 19% of teams at 3-4 have made the NFL playoffs. I don't think you want to fight that battle.
And here's the thing. This is, and I'll say this every single time. If you have a division game at home, it is a must win for a couple of reasons. One, you have to win at home. You can't afford to lose at home if you want to win a division. And I think still the goal that they have is to win the division because they want to play at home. If they lose at home, that puts them already two losses down in the division and at home. And it forces, now I've said this now for years. I've said this now probably since 2014. For someone to win the NFC West, you can't go worse than 4-2. That would force the Cardinals to have to sweep the rest of the division. They've got San Francisco at home. They've got Los Angeles and Seattle on the road. Later the year. And in fact, they close out the season in Seattle and in Los Angeles. You have to beat Seattle at home. There's no way around it. And that's not the situation you want to be in. You do not want to force your team to be in a situation where you have to do that. 3-4, statistically, it's bad news. It's a must win this week. But if they don't win this game, you look at it moving forward. Okay, they can win on the road in Carolina. Carolina's awful. So they're 4-4. They get to 5-4 by playing the 49ers at home. They should be that way. But then they've got two games in consecutive weeks against very good teams in Minnesota, in Atlanta. That puts you in a situation, if they're 6-5, you can only afford to win. You can only afford to lose one more game the rest of the year. One more. And you've basically got to go 4-1 to even have a chance at the playoffs. And, you know, winning, if you don't beat Seattle at home, you don't think they have much of a chance of winning in Minnesota or in Atlanta. And then you still got teams, the tricky teams. I mean, you've got a Miami team you should be able to beat. You've got New Orleans, who is scary because they can score on anyone. They can't stop anyone. You've got Washington. Okay, you could probably get that win. But then you've got those two division road games. You can't afford that. That basically means they have to go at worst 2-1. If they lose to Seattle this week, they have to win two of the three games on the road against those three playoff teams in Minnesota, Atlanta, and Seattle. And then while you'd like to think that they could do that, if they lose to Seattle at home, you don't see that very likely. This is a must-win game, and it's going to end today. This game defines their season. It doesn't determine their season, but it really defines their season. They got even. If they win this weekend, it should propel them, just like last season, the Sunday night football game in Seattle, that propelled them the rest of the season. A win this weekend should propel them because it's a marquee win. It's not just beating bad teams, which is the only thing they've done. They've beaten bad teams. Now, they've beaten bad teams convincingly, pretty much. They've beaten bad teams pretty convincingly. But they beat an elite team, and then they're back on track. Then they can go on the road, beat a bad Panthers team. They can come back home, beat a bad 49ers team. That puts them at what is that?
Six and three.
That's 6-3, and so they're rolling. So now they've rattled off, you know, one, two. They've rolled off five wins in a row, and then they go in. That's the momentum you want when you close, when you go into that back end of the season, which is a tough stretch. This is a must win, and it defines their season. I'm not going to say that it they lose, they're done. But if
they're
they
done
lose,
they're done in the division if they lose.
They are. They're done in the division. But in terms of defining them as a team, they are definitely. If they lose this weekend, there is no way that they are the team we thought they were. It just isn't. But it defines their season. And it will mirror 2013. What happened in 2013? They lost at home against Seattle to go to 3-4. That's when it was after that they turned things around. But at 3-4 in 2013, that's when people were talking about should they bench Carson Palmer for Drew Stanton, and essentially probably was the game that kept them out of the playoffs. They win that game. Now, there were a couple other games that they could have pointed to, the St. Louis game in week one, but that game basically kept them out of the playoffs because that's where things turned around. 10-6. Cardinals are going to have to go at least 10-6, but they have to go 10-6 with tiebreakers. And if they keep losing NFC teams, they're not going to do it.
Yeah, and that's the tough part. You would like to see them finish up, you know, strong and be ready to go. And I think they are. Like, you know, like I said, like if they lose a close game to Seattle, I think they're still in a good position. If they get blown out, you know, I'm not gonna, like you said, it's not pack up the season, it's over, but I don't think that they're a Super Bowl contender.
They're not relevant anymore.
They're a fringe playoff team at best, right? Like, so, you know, I think this game, like you said, it defines what they are as a team and in a season. And so that, you know, that's a lot of pressure, and maybe it's unfair, but let's be honest, that's what we are. We were the pressure coming into this season was you have to win a Super Bowl. Like, not even just get to a Super Bowl, it was you have to win a Super Bowl, right? So it's just, you know, one of those situations, and that's what you're hoping for, I guess, at this point, is that they are ready, prepared, and it's, you know, and they come out and play like the team that we all still think they are and expect them to be.
And that's where one of our good friends on Twitter, she tweeted out the question, you know, they're 3-3, you know, looking at the last 10 games, where are they getting 7 wins to get to 10-6? And I look at the rest of the schedule and I see a very reasonable, if the Cardinals are who we believe they are and should be, I see 8 wins still being a very, it should possibility. That involves beating San Francisco, that means beating Seattle this week. It involves beating, basically, so winning these next 3 games. Then beating the Rams. So they got this next three. So they've got Seattle, Carolina, San Francisco. That's three. Washington, Miami.
They have to win out at home. There's only four home games left, but that puts them at seven. Then they have to
Miami, New Orleans, Los Angeles, and that's what is that? That's seven.
Yeah.
But that leaves them with stealing one of those three,
big road games.
If they win the games that I think they should, that involves winning and beating Seattle this week, then stealing one game on those three road games, and just getting one of them and then winning the rest of the games that they're supposed to, 11-5, and then they're in good position. That's not probably won't win the division, I don't think.
No, probably not. I don't think
it'll win the division.
But it puts them, like you said, in a perfect position to be that five seed and get the worst division winner, which will likely be the NFC South.
And you'll get the Falcons.
Yeah, so you'll get the Falcons again, and you'll get to see them again a second time. And so maybe you've already won that game, like you said, and so you're at a good spot. And so I think they have to win the next four home games, so that puts them at seven wins. They got to find a way to win at least three road games. And like you said, they probably, if they want to, make sure they don't get 2013, they probably need to win four and finish up the season, like you said, 8-2 and finish up 11-5. And then all of a sudden, they're in the tournament. And even if they're 10-6 in the sixth seed, they're in the tournament. And I think they have the horses to, cause any team problems if they get to the tournament. But it starts with, hey, you got to get there.
So this weekend, predictions. Do you see the Cardinals winning? I'm afraid to make predictions anymore. Although, because, the last couple of games, I haven't been on the air to be able to make prediction. It's worked out. So, but I think
no predictions.
No, I'm just kidding. No predictions. Okay. So maybe what I expect the Cardinals to play well. I don't believe we're going to see the sloppy Cardinals. I expect at worst a dogfight between the two teams, but I do not expect to see a bad offensive team or a sloppy defensive team. I just think this, at worst, this is going to be a great game. And at best, the Cardinals do what they did in Seattle last year, where they get out to a lead and end up having to hold on, because Seattle will come back. They are mentally tough. They are better than the Cardinals in that sense, because the Cardinals get a lead, they play strong. And they can, they can get teams to get back in, but they ultimately finish well.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I think the Cardinals play well. I expect them to win. Maybe that's, a prediction in and of itself, but I expect them to win because I think they're a good team, and I don't want them to prove me wrong and to prove me that they're not a good team. So I'm going to continue to keep the faith, and I have faith that they will do me right this week.
That sounds good. That'll wrap up this edition of Rise Up, C-Red. We've been talking about the Cardinals. Are they fixed? And it looks like hopefully, maybe, perhaps they are. If there's anything about, fence sitting, it looks like they are. So we've wrapped up that show. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Roots. You can find Rise Up C-Red on a number of places. You can find us on Twitter, Rise Up C-Red, on Facebook, Rise Up C-Red. We're hosted on Blog Talk Radio. It's featured on CardsWire.com, the site I run, and RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the site that Seth runs. You can also find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and also featured on Sports360AZ.com. We'll be back next week after hopefully the Cardinals pull away to 4-3 on the season and get a big division win. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Roots. And until then, it's time to rise up and see red.
Is this your glass? Can I have a sip?
Sure.
Oh, Coke. Are you not drinking Coca-Cola Zero Sugar anymore?
Check for yourself.
It is Coca-Cola Zero Sugar. No way.
New Coca-Cola Zero Sugar. Tastes more like Coke. Try it.
Zero.